At the COP26 International Climate Summit in Glasgow, Indigenous peoples are speaking out, Peruvian activists in their fight against deforestation, the Maori from New Zealand on the lingering effects of colonialism, and Pacific Islanders as rising seas threaten whole islands. Native Americans arrived at COP as a new study in the U.S. published in the journal Science concluded that the historic forced relocation of Native Americans to lands of less quantity and quality has made them uniquely vulnerable to global warming. Fawn Sharp is president of the National Congress of American Indians. She joins us now from Glasgow. President Sharp, welcome.
Thank you.
Well, your thoughts first on this 7-year study from Yale, Colorado State University, and the University of Michigan. It's a first of its kind a data set on the long-term environmental impacts of, the forced marches, the theft of Indian land. 98.9% of original native land repossessed by European settlers. Your thoughts on that study?
Yes, that study is proving what we've known for a very long time. Our ancestors have long foretold of a day of reckoning when the world as it exists outside of Indian country just simply can't continue the way it has. And in the absence of the outside world being able to work in a sustained way, they are coming after the lands that we have occupied and possessed from the beginning of time. So this study is very true. It's very consistent with our traditional knowledge, wisdom, and teachings throughout the ages.
Well, some of their conclusions were that the forced marches, for instance, were two areas more exposed to climate change hazards like heat and lack of rain, or land with no valuable resources like oil and gas, usually close to federal land. So you can't expand because the federal land is so highly regulated. Is that, be more specific when you're saying that you and other Native Americans were dispossessed, what was the problem from moving from your land to other land?
Yes, the problem is we have historically had a very deep connection, not only to the physical aspects of the environmental landscape, but we have a cultural and a spiritual connection to these lands. And so it has taken a toll on not only our generation, but all those generations back from the point of relocation and removal. We just simply have a connection to these very sacred spaces. And so it has taken a significant toll on all of us collectively and each tribe individually.
Well, then are you seeing things like the report found that it wasn't just a forced march, but it was to land that was less in quantity and less in quality? So in other words, more extreme heat, less rain. I mean, are you seeing that in the lands where Native Americans are now?
Yes, we are seeing that. Fortunately, tribal nations have been able to be resilient. We redefine our life ways that are consistent with a way of life. Regardless of where we are placed, we're going to continue to survive and we're going to continue to be resilient. But it certainly has taken a toll on all of us.
Well, you talk about Indian land now being areas of drought, wildfires, but even land that was held in Louisiana, members of the Choctaw tribe became the first U.S. climate refugees, $48 million of federal money spent to resettle them off their sinking island on the Gulf of Mexico. They're going to be moved inland.
Yes.
To a town. This is, if not a forced march, from 100 years ago, a forced move by climate change?
Yes. In fact, my tribe, the Quinault Nation, is currently under a state of national emergency due to sea level rise and the threat of taking out the only access road into our village. We're having to relocate two main villages to higher ground because of sea level rise. At a high tide, the ocean will encroach into our village and it'll go to our jail facility, our community center, the only store in town. So my tribe is being forced to relocate to higher ground.
Yeah. And by the way, we understand in Washington State, where you are vice president of the Native American organization there, you negotiated how to pay for this move. Is it going to be paid for, do I understand, by a carbon tax?
Yes. We've long recognized that the scale of the climate crisis is far exceeding the public treasury and resources We're simply paying for the symptoms of climate change, the hurricanes, tornadoes, wildfires, megafires. And so we set out to hold those who are directly responsible accountable, the fossil fuel industry and pricing carbon and all those who emit carbon emissions. So that's something that we set out to do. We tried to secure legislation at a state level, certainly at a congressional level. We took our initiative out to the citizens in I-1631. The fossil fuel industry spent over $30 million to kill that campaign in Washington state. We came back and were able to successfully legislate carbon pricing in the Climate Commitment Act in the state of Washington. And now here at COP26, we are addressing the vulnerable impacts of climate change to indigenous communities and are vying for direct access to global resources and funding so that we can prepare. We are the most vulnerable, we are disproportionately impacted, and we are left without resources.
Yeah, I want to talk more about COP26, but staying in Washington state, we also understand that there's a glacier there that provides water for the local river. Talk about what you're seeing in the waterways.
Yes. So about a decade ago, I had the opportunity to take a helicopter flight over the glaciers that feed the mighty Quinault. There are four glaciers, and we are fully expecting to see a glacier in that initial trip. And we just saw a pool of murky water. It looked like a large mud puddle. The glacier was completely gone. There was no remnant of a glacial sheen. 3 years ago, I went back to the ridge, and I could see that a second glacier, the White Glacier, had rapidly retreated just within that 10-year period. From my first visit. And I really was worried this summer when we had 111 degree temperature at Lake Quinault. We've never had heat to that degree. And I saw a report that Mount Rainier lost nearly 4 feet of snowpack in a 3-day window. So I can't imagine the current state of our glaciers following extreme heat and temperatures and actually blew out our grid. We lost power. We weren't able to operate our air conditioning systems just because of the extreme heat. Fish have heat lesions due to the warm temperature in the Columbia.
Is this a salmon?
Yes.
Yeah. Look, we know one specific flashpoint of indigenous activism in the U.S. is Oak Flat. That's the mountainous area of desert southeast of Phoenix. It could be one of the largest copper deposits in the U.S. This is a metal that's crucial to building, for instance, solar panels, which moves the country forward. It's also underneath a Native American religious site.
Yes.
What do you say to people who say we just have to advance? I mean, churches have been built over in the name of progress. What do you say to them?
It's wrong to think that any other sovereign can freely take unilateral action affecting sacred sites of Native people. A tribal nation has that inherent authority, not given to us by a state or a federal government. It's an attribute of our existence as Native people. If we are going to heal as a country, we must honor and respect the basic human and civil rights of the people that have been here long before the United States was here.
Well, and the people who've been sounding a warning. And here you are at COP26 in Glasgow. I'm sure as an Indigenous person, you know that when it benefits people, they embrace the romance, you know, of the Native American.
Yes.
And yet there's not maybe follow through. How do you keep from being window dressing, you know, held up as, you know, look, we have a Native American here, and actually get something done?
Yes, that's an excellent question. And it's one that we fully expect as the world begins to understand and value the role of Indigenous peoples in these global conversations. There's this preliminary thought of how do we substantively engage Indigenous peoples. I think that the critical point that we are taking away from COP26 is that the rest of the world and world leaders understand that the future health of the planet and humanity is inextricably tied to Indigenous knowledge and wisdom. And there's this perception that we are weak and vulnerable, but to the contrary, we are strong. We have values, we have teachings that are centuries old, and they are proven. And as this world is trying to seek solutions, they're finding You simply can't legislate your way out of this. You can't negotiate your way out of this. You can't buy your way out of this crisis. You have to reconcile a way of life that's consistent with the values that Indigenous peoples hold, the values and the science of place-based people that have, and the knowledge that's been handed down. So that's our takeaway from this COP, that there certainly is this perception that by inviting Indigenous peoples into certain spaces, it's new, it's different. What are the motives? But quite frankly, we are understanding, as the world is beginning to understand, that we have to include just centuries of knowledge and wisdom that we bring to the table. We just can't solve this crisis without it.
That's Fawn Sharp. She's president of the National Congress of American Indians. She is in Glasgow at COP26 representing Indigenous people and Native Americans. President Sharp, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. Siokwil.
To say it again?
Siokwil. That's thank you in my Quinault language.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much.